Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
It's a podcast.
It sure is. What antiques are we talking about this week?
We're going to visit a pretty crazy subject. We're going to talk about marbles.
Marbles!
So, do you know what marbles are?
Small round glass toys.
You're mostly correct, but you left out several ingredients.
Fun?
Yeah, the definition has to include fun. I've never found playing marbles to be fun, but that's just me.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I liked playing marbles. I thought it was a good time.
It's a small spherical toy made from glass, clay, steel, plastic, agate, or other materials.
Oh, it just can be anything, huh?
Yeah, and the reason for that is, we don't know how old marbles is, really.
Oh.
It's suggested that marbles have been found as far back as 2500 BCE, which is to say that they found a lot of little clay balls and they've assumed that they were from playing marbles because otherwise they don't serve a whole lot of purpose.
Ceremonial purpose.
For the first time they found something and didn't assume it was religious in nature. So they're commonly found at 13 millimeters, but range from 1 millimeter to 8 centimeters. Don't get used to that, because as soon as we get to American history, we're going to be dropping the use of millimeters immediately, which sucks, and I hate it, but fine. So yeah, they go back a whole long ways. We have recorded use of them from early Egyptian civilization, and I mean like all the way back, as well as depictions of kids playing variations of what could be recognized as a game of marbles using nuts, walnuts usually, which seems odd because the depictions in question are Greek. And they had clay, so fine, I guess. So yeah, the bulk of marbles were probably just leftover clay from pottery, when they weren't just round rocks. Although, like, later and later you start seeing intentionally handcrafted marbles from a variety of materials meant for, I suppose, rich children?
I mean, if you've got some extra clay lying around, you might as well marbles.
You may as well marbles. There is a legend that the proper game of marbles originated in the Netherlands. I don't know that that's true, given all of the stuff that I just said about how far back you can see people playing games with balls. It seems strange to give that one to the Dutch. Like, if I find something like 2500 BCE, like I've got like crude drawings of children playing with little round marbles, I'm not going to be like, yeah, but the Dutch really invent... I think the Dutch may have written down rules for it, which is different from originating.
I think what they're going for there is, we don't know what kind of games were played with the marbles, but we do know that the game we play with it now can be traced back at least to the Dutch.
Yeah.
Whereas we cannot say for certain that anyone in ancient Egypt was playing by the same rules we play by today.
There you go. That sums it up nicely. It's still partially legend because it's not well documented, but this is where the name comes from, is the idea that the Dutch were grinding down semi-precious stones, particularly marble, and like limestone and agates until the rocks were like little spheres.
Huh.
And we do, of course, have evidence of them actually doing that because marbles is a game, but like I said, there's an element of it that's sort of rooted in like hand-down tales, so for me... The story really starts in 1846. Now, people were making marbles before now, usually with leftover glass at the end of the day, and they were making them individually, and shaping them by kind of turning the little blob of glass into a round cup, right?
Right.
Elias Greiner, a German, he invented the marble scissors.
Oh.
In 1846. This is a pair of scissors that has the rounded cup on the bottom and a notched shearing end. So what you do is you roll the glass into a long cane with the entire interior design kind of in the middle throughout the cane. If you've seen hard candy being made, very similar to that. And individual balls would be cut off of the cane and shaped immediately in the little cup in the scissors.
Cool.
And this would introduce Germany's very quick ascension to the Kings of Marbles. Which I find funny because I also found out that despite being called the marble scissors, he invented them to make large quantity of glass doll's eyes.
I see.
But, like, guess which one they got used more often for?
See, I would have guessed doll's eyes because, boy howdy, did they make a lot of dolls.
For every doll they made 50 marbles. That's not a fact, but I'm just saying marbles actually outnumber pretty much any other toy no matter where you look.
It is probably the simplest toy to construct.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, the German-made glass marbles would pretty much be the marble market until 1905. We have a Martin F. Christensen, a Danish man who is living in Akron, Ohio. Put a pin on that map because we'll be coming back. He's invented a machine to make perfectly spherical marbles.
Oh.
It failed several times in its early design. Eventually, it worked, and he called it the marble machine, in case you had any doubts that this was made specifically for marbles.
And they used it to make doll's eyes.
Yeah, and it was a weird... No, they didn't. The very earliest one, you could actually only make one marble at a time.
Oh.
And it worked on a really similar concept as the marble scissors, where you had canes that you were cutting off into the machine. And the machine was kind of like the inside of a meat grinder, where it was two rods that had smooth channels cut into them. And the molten glass marbles would fall in, and as it turned, would be slowly polished into a perfect sphere.
Oh.
So while it's really slow, the quality of the marble is unmatched, because everything else up until now is being made by hand.
I see.
This is actually considered officially the transitional marble, as it is really straddling the line of a handmade, as the glass rods still have to be handmade, and a machine-made marble.
Oh.
In the 1920s, you would actually start seeing proper machine-made marbles, which are actually kind of Acme, like a Looney Tunes machine, where you actually just fill it up with molten glass.
And it just spits out marbles?
Yeah, and it drops out like little hunks of it that are polished very similar to the marble machine, but you could have multiples at once. So that was it. You filled it up with all the colors that you needed for the day. At the end of the day, it'd be empty, and the next day you'd refill it. I started reading about it, and I was like, there's no way that this is actually how the machine worked. That's way too simple. It is.
They're a simple toy.
And another thing about the machine marbles in the 1920s onward is that they were pretty much all either in Akron, Ohio, or in cities that were within driving distance of Akron, Ohio.
Would you say Ohio was the marble capital of the United States?
I would say, at the time, Ohio was the marble capital of the world. It's Mexico now.
Oh.
But yeah, it absolutely was. This is mostly because Martin F. Christensen, who we mentioned before, he did make a marble company to go with his magical marble machine. God, I had a fun saying that. But his business failed, like, pretty much immediately for reasons that I could not find.
Oh no.
I could not find out what on earth he did so wrong that his machine became immortal, but his company did not. And after that, it got picked up by a bunch of companies that filled the niche. And then I guess everyone just kind of thought to stay in the same city while they were competing?
You might as well.
1920s to the World War II is considered the golden age of machine maids, including the introduction of giant companies that you might know if you're into marbles at all, like Acro Agate, Peltier Glass, the Master Marble Company, Vitro Agate Co., and Agate King. The story ends in the 1960s, when marble manufacture, for all the reasons you are about to assume, has primarily moved overseas to Japan.
Ah.
And for reasons I also couldn't find a source on, they more or less only make cat's eye marbles.
Huh.
So that'll be your first fun marble fact, is that cat's eyes are probably the most reproduced marble of all time.
I see.
There are three major kinds of marbles, as we've discussed here. You have handmade glass, non-glass, and machine-made. I thought it was interesting that machine-made ends up getting its own category where, like, all of the other marbles just don't want to associate with them.
Huh.
So handmade glass, we know what that is. Non-glass could be made of clay, pottery, bone china, actual real agate, or is a variety called the steely, which was a steel ball, and it was different from ball bearings in one important way, which is that you had a little cross, little four-point cross mark, where the steel was folded into a ball, which is how you knew it was made specifically to be a marble, which I thought was fascinating.
Oh.
Wood, stone, and paper mache. Which also surprised the shit out of me.
That doesn't sound like a marble that would last very long.
I'm going to take you up on that because after I had that initial reaction, I remembered wallpaper beads.
I don't know what that is.
It was like a 1960s craft where you would roll up wallpaper and use paper mache glue to turn them into little beads and make bracelets out of them.
Oh.
I actually think the Victorians did something like that too, but I'm familiar with the 1960s.
They were like bracelets you could go swimming in.
No, I don't think they were.
Or, like, bracelets you could take out in the rain.
The older ones had shellac, so actually you probably could take them out in the rain.
Okay.
And machine maids are anything machine made in the U.S. until World War II. Like I said, the history of antique and vintage marbles ends at World War II. Essentially, everything after that is not considered vintage, antique, or collectible, unless you just kind of like the way it looks.
Really? Because for me, marbles are such a 60s toy.
Is that true? Is that the... Yeah, really?
Well, in my own mind, like, that is the era I most associate them with.
Do you want to hear some more granular types of marbles?
Sure.
So there's a lot of marble-specific lingo, which I think is extremely funny because it's very clearly derived from children and what they call things, which makes talking about them as an adult very fun. In fact, a person who plays marbles is called a mibster.
Huh.
You have the fruit aid, which is a marble that has strands of opaque white and a fruit color. And when I say fruit aid, it's generally like an orange and white would be orangeade, yellow lemonade, so on and so forth. There is, of course, the cat's eye, which is an eye-shaped center mass of color injected into the core. Aggies, which are any glass that is made to appear as a cut agate. Allies or reels, which is any marble that is made out of real alabaster. Oxbloods, which is any marble that has a streaky patch resembling blood. Lutzes, which are a German handmade swirl with bands of copper flakes. Any clay marble is generally called a commie, for common. There are crystals, or clearies, or puries. You're maybe getting the naming convention of these. Which is any clear-colored glass, and they sometimes have more descriptive names for what specific color they are, such as bloods, which I'm sure won't ever be misunderstood on the street.
Yeah.
Opals, and the green ghost.
Ooh.
Yeah. A shooter is any marble larger than the standard marble, and a Tom Bowler is a marble larger than the shooter. And peewees are any marble smaller than your average marble. When I say average marble, what does that mean? Essentially nothing. The sizing is made up, like the points on whose line is it. You've got tigers, which are clear with orange-yellow stripes. Sulfides. These are some of my favorites. They are clear marbles with a little statuette or figure inside. The figure is made with kaolin clay, but because it's encased in usually clear glass, it has a really interesting sort of silvery shine to it because of the way the light refracts. And these are some of the rarest marbles out there, with domesticated animals and wild animals being common, and by common I mean we're talking in the hundreds already, to human figures and inanimate objects being extremely rare. One sulfide marble that had a small statuette of Woodrow Wilson in it sold for $2,500, so that's something.
A small statuette of Woodrow Wilson. Of all people.
Yes.
Our boy Woodrow.
Not to digress, but that reminds me of the beautiful, most perfect slice of whale tooth I once saw, upon which was drawn Lyndon B. Johnson. You know, everyone's favorite president.
Everyone's favorite, Lyndon B. Johnson. What in the whole heck?
It's haunted me to this day. I think I own it. I'm not sure.
What do you mean you think?
I don't know if I own it. I own a lot of antiques, what can I say?
I feel like you should be able to keep track of how many whale's teeth with Lyndon B. Johnson carved on them you have. I feel like you should maybe have like an Excel spreadsheet somewhere. Or maybe perhaps just a simple post-it note list on your computer monitor.
Don't forget your Lyndon B. Johnson tooth.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think if you own such a cursed artifact, you do everything you can to forget.
I think you need to go down and get yourself a tattoo to remind yourself, memento style, that you own a whale's tooth with Lyndon B. Johnson carved onto it.
And what better way to do that than to just get the tooth with Lyndon B. Johnson carved onto it tattooed onto my body forever?
Exactly.
It's going to be a great. I'm going to look so good. Other marbles include scenic chinas, which are actually largely considered the rarest marbles of all. These are made of china, fired with blue glaze, and usually kind of like a china plate that, you know, the blue and white that you're thinking of, and glazed with any imagery such as landscapes, flowers, geometric patterns. These are the rarest marbles of all time. Supposedly finding one is immediately in the thousands. There are also, I really like these. These are old, these are newer, but comic marbles or picture marbles, which have a transfer decoration of comic book characters like Superman, or advertising characters like I don't know how old Fruit Pie the Magician is,
but we all love him.
But we all love it. One of them had just Tom Mix, the old cowboy film star. So you could just have a marble that had his... You don't know Tom Mix?
Everyone's favorite cowboy.
Oh, well, there you are. Do you want a marble with a face on it? That's possible. That is a drop in the bucket of kinds of marbles there are.
An abbreviated introduction to marble varietals.
The ones that I listed are sort of, I mixed rare ones and easy to find ones that are still like valuable. You know, oxbloods, they don't go for a lot, but you can sell them for money. You can sell anything for money. I don't know why I said that. Jesus.
That's generally how money works. Yes.
An oxblood would be, you know, like a $20, $30 marble. And that's big money in the marble world. Marbles don't usually go into the high hundreds. And the ones that do are exceedingly rare. Marbles include two of my absolute favorite collectible factors. It's very, very cheap to get into, and the best way to get into it is to just buy big vats of them.
So you get all the delightful joy of sorting through big piles of a thing.
Yeah, yeah, which is, I think, probably the greatest joy known to human beings.
It is truly something. It's like Halloween candy sorting through it after you get your haul.
Yeah, when you get to sort it... So obviously, I think everyone kind of knows and guesses that reproductions are really common, and also that old marbles and contemporary marbles are easily confused because they're just glass balls.
How could you? How dare you imply that my marbles are mere balls of glass? They are more than the sum of their parts.
So fucking reductive.
How dare you? How fucking dare you?
I know. God.
Unfollow me.
I'm gonna go lie down under roughly 4,000 marbles.
Don't talk to me or my marbles ever again.
Keep talking to me like that, you're gonna lose your marbles.
You promised! You promised we could get through the entire episode without making that joke. We took a vow. We took a solemn vow together. We made a blood oath between us that neither of us would make that joke during the marbles episode. And you betray me.
I shed no blood.
You betray me like this. How could you?
I had to bring it up because there's an interesting factoid, which is that there is absolutely no link between that phrase and the game of marbles.
What?
Yeah. It turns out one of the great etymological mysteries of the universe is where that fucking came from, because it sure as sugar won people who play marbles.
How?
Alright, see, now you see why I had to bring it up?
I'm so confused.
People assume that it's lost your marbles because, you know, marbles was kind of like kids' poker, where there's a lot of people play to keeps. So if you lost them, you'd be mad, you'd be pissed off. That's not true. There isn't a lot of evidence of it being used that way. In fact, there's none. Nobody knows where it comes from. Everyone's just kind of pretty sure it has nothing to do with marbles, like the game.
That's insane.
Obviously, it has something to do with the concept of the item of a marble.
But, oh my god.
I could see the wheel turning.
The singular hamster wheel in my brain slowly squeaking around.
The marble machine in your brain.
Oh my god. All right, well, now that you've broken our blood oath, what now? What else you got for me?
This is one of those things where it's actually pretty easy to pick up on noticing the difference between, like, a handmade marble and even an older machine-made marble and the contemporary ones just based on bright color and elaborate design. Obviously, this gets dumbed down as time goes on, where a 1940s marble isn't going to be as elaborate as a handmade German one, but it's noticeable. If you just have, like, a handful of marbles and you can compare it to, like, obviously we live in the internet age, you can just pull up marblecollectors.org, and it's very easy to pick up on the feel that, the aesthetics of them have, you know?
Yeah.
Also, of course, especially as you go older, you look for imperfections. It wasn't until the 1920s that marbles were largely perfectly round, for one thing.
What?
Well, yeah, like I was saying, when they're cane cut, they're still just being pressed into a little cup, and they're round, but they're not perfect little spheres.
Oh.
And since they're being cut from glass, or some of them are being blown individually, they all have pontal marks.
I do love the word pontal mark.
Really?
It just sounds like a fanciful Dungeons & Dragons knight. Sir Pontal Mark.
Wow, nice. Any marble with a pontal mark is automatically more desirable. Of course, then you have to get into, is this an art piece that was made contemporarily? Generally, those are going to be larger. There aren't a lot of 5/8 inch marbles that are handmade now contemporarily. And you also, any marble that is smaller or bigger than 5/8 of an inch will all have different prices generally. Like I said, they're called peewees, shooters, and tombolers. They're more valuable than a standard marble. Every website I went to did tell me that you're gonna need calipers. Because unlike toy trains, there is no set scale.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just kind of however big you made your machine to make the dang marbles.
We know it's round and small. Beyond that, we've got nothing. Let's go, boys.
And that's another really cool thing about marbles is that theoretically you could discover a new marble. Like a size and design and color combination that has never been documented before. Because even the machine-made ones, no two are alike. Because, like, it's just globs of molten glass. They're all coming out different.
Just some random slag.
Even the cane-made ones, the way the canes are rolled means that the center, even though they resemble each other in terms of, like, rough pattern and color, are all very different. Every single marble.
Oh.
So if you're one of those people that gets really into taxonomy, you could make your mission to find a marble that's never been seen before. And that's not impossible.
Just do some marble discovering.
Yeah, I think that's so fucking cool, right?
Yeah.
Like everything with marbles, the condition has its own terminologies. And so condition, obviously, like with everything, is really important to marbles. And it's very rare to find anything in mint or near mint condition unless you get like a set that's still in the box, obviously. This makes sense because these are for a game that is largely boiling down to throwing glass around. So, like, big surprise, most of them are damaged in some way.
Who could have possibly foreseen?
I know, right? I found a tip where someone was like, well, the glass was better made so they don't break as easily. And that's how you can tell them apart. And I was like, are you suggesting I break my marbles to see if they're real? Like,
yeah. Just take a hammer and find out if they're real or not. Works for most things, actually, I found.
Yeah, it turns out. 90% of antiques is just destroying things.
Oh my god, is this just the very literal version of the proverb, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail?
Oh my, I think it is.
When all you have is a hammer, you assume you can use it to tell if marbles are real.
Yeah. So you have chipping, which is chips. Pitting, which is little indentations that kind of warp the surface.
Pits, some call them.
Pits, some call them. Flakes, which are a wider, shallow chip. Moons, which is any partial chunk of glass missing. Subsurface moons, which is when there's no glass missing, but the breakage is large and visible. And roughness and haziness. Roughness mostly just from the texture being whittled away. Haziness because glass gets sick.
Glass gets sick?
I'm sorry, I forgot that sick glass isn't a term, everyone. Yeah, over time, based on whatever chemicals were made to make that batch of glass, glass can kind of, like, cloud over time.
Oh, no, glass gets sick.
Yeah, it's called sickness, when glass, it becomes cloudy for reasons other than surface scratches.
Now I'm just imagining, like, a little chibi drawing of a marble, and it's got, like, a hot water pack on it, and, like, a thermometer sticking out. And, like, a tiny little blanket pulled up for over it.
Oh, no, it's sick.
Glass got sick! Oh, no!
Glass got sick! There is a lot of contention about whether or not you should fix damage on marbles. I can see the dilemma, because on the one hand, marbles' value to anything but a child is its appearance. And there's only so much you can do to fix it. Usually it is either to buff it, which very, very slightly removes the absolute topmost surface of the glass, which makes it a little clearer, usually kind of just deals with haziness and any kind of rough, like pits that are making it hard to look at it, or polishing it, which is fully stripping a layer of glass off to get rid of any surface damage.
Oh, that sounds extreme.
Both of them damage the value.
I mean, cleaning seems to damage the value of almost all antiques.
No, cleaning is fine, as long as you clean it in a way that's appropriate for the material.
Okay.
I clean all my books, for one thing. But I use, this is not a joke, I use a special book cleaner.
Can you give me your book cleaner source? Because I have some books that could definitely use some de-mildewing.
Yeah, it's called Abzerene.
Abzerene.
Yep, Abzerene is a totally liquid-free, it kind of works like a tacky eraser.
Oh.
It is the gentlest and safest way to clean paper. There's a tip for y'all.
Yay! And now, thanks to our marbles episode, we know how to safely clean antique paper.
Well, I just told you that there's no safe way to clean marble, so.
So it's a consolation prize. Here's how to safely clean paper.
Here's how to clean your books. Like, I can't help you with the marbles. Buffing it generally is kind of acceptable just because you can't tell when it happened, really. I would be shocked to see someone who could look at a marble and say, this has been buffed and I don't want it. Polishing changes the shape.
Oh.
And also, like, if you can't prove that it came out of, like, a container, some sort of sealed original container, it would be pretty suspicious to see an undamaged marble. Like, in any way, shape, or form, completely undamaged. The damage is a value kind of in proportion to how much you can tell it was fixed.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think it just turns into a personal choice. If you're collecting marbles as an investment, and I can't stress enough on every episode that I can bring this up, that there's no solid investment except for art. And even that is a gamble.
I would say investing in the Antiques Freaks Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks will always pay off.
Oh, that always repays in huge dividends. So that, yeah, you know what? Us and art, pretty much.
Arguably, we are art.
I mean...
Think about it, won't you? Thank you.
I sure think you're a work of art, Ken.
Aww. Only because you're a masterpiece.
Aw, shucks. So yeah, if your marble collection is just for you to look at and go, cool, marble, love it. Or even, you know, even if you're just kind of getting excitedly into having, like, one of each example you can find. If all that matters to you is its visual appeal, go ahead and fix it. Just understand that it will lose its value. I think this, like many other things, is just, like, it's such a visual collectible. And unless you've got a really rare piece, when you say value, it tends to be negligible. Are you really going to miss the difference between $35 and $40?
If you are, perhaps Marvel investment is not really where you should be putting your cash.
Yeah. If the money is that important, there's a lot of different things that aren't marbles you could be investing in. Most people get into marbles for a mixture of nostalgia and the hunt.
And the joy of sorting things into different piles.
God, it's so fun, though.
It is deeply satisfying.
Marbles actually have an official rating range grading system, much like comic books. Unlike comic books, there is no formal way to be trained in how to grade them. It is mostly opinion. However, since it's just based on how damaged it is, it's pretty easy to agree on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
There's mint, which obviously means never been used. Almost all of the time, these are going to come with packaging. Near mint, which just means it's got very minimal damage. Good has about the kind of wear, play wear you'd expect. And collectible is the ones that are in very bad shape.
Ah.
I do like that the worst quality still has a very nice name. Like, it's a collectible.
It's quaint.
It's still pretty.
You are at liberty to enjoy it at your leisure.
Unfortunately, aside from just kind of general appearance, there's not a lot of way to tell reproductions. Sulfides have been really common. Sulfides, if you recall, are the clear marbles that have little figurines in them.
Such as Woodrow Wilson.
Such as Woodrow Wilson.
Everyone's favorite, Woodrow Wilson.
Can't wait to make my own that has Lyndon B. Johnson to go with my whale tooth.
Oh man, I can't wait to go to Woodrow Wilson Con. They're gonna absolutely lose it over my marble.
I'm gonna throw it right in their eye.
You think you're the biggest woodhead? Look at this. I am the Woodrow Wilson King.
Is woodheads? Is that what they would call them?
That's what I'm calling me. I'm founding it. By the way, okay, this is also the announcement for the premiere of the first Woodrow Wilson Con.
Wow.
At which we will be celebrating everyone's favorite Woodrow Wilson. I estimate very high attendance because, as I've said, there's nobody who doesn't love Woodrow Wilson. He's your first thought when you wake up in the morning. He's the last thought before you go to sleep. And he permeates your dreams. Woodrow Wilson, America's sweetheart.
Will the marketplace be called, like, have Woodrows and Wood Isles?
Yes. It's Artist's Woodrow. Is the artist alley.
Wow. Wow. Is it now a bad time to admit that I have absolutely no idea who Woodrow Wilson is?
Hey, you want to know a secret?
You don't either?
He was a president. And the volleyballs are named after him.
No shit, really?
No, I made that up. That was a lie. I'm sorry.
Oh, goddamn. I fully believed you. Fuck. God, you owe me a besties for tricking me like this.
The great thing about no one knowing jack shit about Woodrow Wilson is that you can easily become the person who knows everything about Woodrow Wilson because no one's going to check.
God, what a fucking aspiration that is, huh? I'm gonna be the guy. I want to be the guy in the friend group that knows just a lot of facts about Woodrow Wilson. And I'm making fun of this like you haven't made that leap in your life. Like, you're not fully there. Like, now that's who you are.
Oh, wait. Hey. Guess who we should know more about?
Wait, what?
Woodrow Wilson, because he was president during World War I.
No shit.
Oops. Oopsies.
big oops. I know way more about the war than I do about the man who was in charge of the country during it.
Which means he was also president during the events depicted in the film Iron-Jawed Angels.
That's great. Hey, I was joking when I said that, like, you're going to make a choice to become the friend that knows everything about Woodrow Wilson.
I think I will become the friend who knows everything about Woodrow Wilson.
I think you've learned everything already on air. I don't think there's anything else to say about the man.
God, we're going to get so many angry emails from Woodrow Wilson fans, like legit Woodrow Wilson fans. It's going to turn out that there's been a Woodrow Wilson con this entire time.
Lin-Manuel Miranda just announced like the musical based on Woodrow Wilson and we missed it.
Yeah. Oops. Oopsies.
So sulfides, since they're very, very visually distinct and also rare, they've become like very commonly reproduced. And other than condition, there's not a lot of ways I can help you to determine the ones that are and aren't. So just be careful. We're going to default to if it's too good to be true, it is here. Also, a kind of marble called a gutta percha. That is easier to tell because a gutta percha has usually three or four colors in a swag-like design or like bunting shape where the reproductions just kind of look like a mishmash of color. Usually they are orange, black, yellow, that kind of thing. There are some kinds of marbles that are just kind of not able to be reproduced by machinery. A lot of the early German lattice works and like bird cages, which as the name suggests have like lattice work in the center of the marble, is not something a machine can do reliably. And clay marbles, as you may have guessed, are extremely commonly reproduced. And to a listing, I have yet to see one that doesn't claim to have been unearthed from the Tennessee River from the Civil War. How it's possible to unearth a matching set of marbles from the Tennessee River that are still fully painted? That's a great question. It almost sounds like bullshit, because it is.
Almost as if.
In general, unadorned clay marbles, you can find a lot of really old ones. They're called commies for a reason. They're extremely common. They're not worth a lot. Unless you can, like, prove that, like, Diogenes put one in his mouth, like... It's still, like, no matter how old it is, there's no way to prove how old it is, you know?
Sorry, just... Are you thinking of Cicero?
No, wait, why would I be... I wasn't thinking of... I just picked the first, like, old guy I could think of.
Oh, because I think Cicero actually put marbles in his mouth and went down to the beach to yell at the ocean to make sure he could still be heard clearly. Like, that was his vocal warm-up.
What the fuck?
For oration, yeah. He wanted to make sure he was enunciating very clearly, so he put marbles in his mouth and went down to the ocean and yelled.
Okay, that would have been a better reference to have made, and I didn't do it, so thank you.
That's really fine, because I'm pretty sure that story isn't true, but, you know.
Well, you know. And, that's about all I got for you on marbles, Ken. You got any questions?
I am so educated on marbles, thank you, my friend.
Somewhere I had to add in, so I was talking about, like, the advice they gave for telling if they were real was if the glass broke easily, and how I was like, that's not actionable advice. Same website gave me this tidbit of phenomenally bad advice. In my notes, I have a whole little square that I highlighted that says phenomenally bad advice.
Excellent.
If the person selling the marbles is old, the marbles are more likely to be old, too. What an assumption to make!
Huh. It does remind me of the common phrase, my grandma had this all her life, of someone bringing a random antique into the shop, only to be informed that grandma bought it in 1980, because grandma did not lose purchasing power upon her birth.
Yeah, except imagine that you're positing it as actual advice for buying old. Like, I guess don't ever buy brownies from that sweet old lady at church either.
Because those are also antiques.
Yeah, those are also the same age as her. Everything any old person has owned, they have had the whole time. You don't know this, but at a certain point, when babies were born, they were given everything they'd ever own. And it all aged. It all aged right beside them. Stupid bad advice. Our sources for today include MarbleCollecting.com, and I cannot stress this enough, pretty much 90% of our sources today. Absolutely 100% recommend this website. They have an exhaustive list of marbles. They have an ID guide that will help you identify a marble you have. They can help you link certain designs to certain makes, which will help you link it to a certain age. I can't stress enough how good this website is for marbles. I don't think I've ever used anything else when it comes to actually working with marbles.
Marbles, won't you? Thank you.
Although I do have a couple other. GrandpaMarble.com. I didn't learn anything, but he sells marbles and I love his website, so I included him. TreasurePursuits.com. How to identify vintage marbles. ToyHallOfFame.org. Their article on marbles. CollectorsWeekly.com, Art Glass, Marbles, and Wikipedia.
Donate, won't you? Thank you.
Thank you.
If you would like to tell us about your marbles, or just want to say hello, you can email us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can also post in our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, or tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com.
If you liked all the number of times I said marbles, consider going down to wherever you're listening to this podcast and leaving us a review. It is monstrously helpful, and they usually make us laugh, and even the bad ones are pretty good.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes or our special Halloween presentation of the Penny Dreadful Varney the Vampire, or view beautiful and fabulous videos of Drag King Guy Alias reading our favorite Victorian self-help guide, A Gentleman's Guide to Dressing with Economy, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
Cannot stress enough how high quality Guy Alias is. It's so fantastic. It's worth the price of admission.
He's a hoot and a holler. Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and filling our hearts with love.
So much love.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's right, you.
Bye.
Goodbye.